It comes from the spiritual world. It's not something mundane. Sometimes this sound vibration is compared to radio. We tune in to radio station. So this sound vibration is always going on, just like when you tune into a TV station or a radio station, you twist the dial, or you turn the channel knob, or you push the channel button, or you hold the channel button down your remote control, and then you get the certain thing that you've been waiting for. So the certain thing, very certain thing that everybody's been waiting for, knowingly or unknowingly, is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And it's constantly being vibrated from the spiritual side. Golokaya Vrindavana Hariyana Sankirtana. It's thus our receptors that are not tuned in. Our receptors are our mind, our intelligence, our sense of ego, our desire, our enthusiasm to hear the sound vibration. Usually we're very enthusiastic to hear some singer on MTV or Channel 56. I don't mean to believe Channel 56, I think they're here taking some movies of us. But these are the things that we're accustomed to hearing. We like to hear them. We like to get questions and answers. We like to hear the sounds of our parents or our children. We like to hear familiar, we like to hear the sound of the babbling brook or the breeze in the trees. We like the sound of nature. We like the sound of the rustling of leaves sometimes. So there's so many wonderful things in nature to hear. So many wonderful words to hear. So many wonderful songs to hear from our friends, from our loved ones, from the famous singers. But this is a different kind of vibration. It's not something that you grow tired of, it becomes tired. So they have, as we all know, the parade of hits. And 1 week it's one group of hits, the next week it's another group of hits, and then a month later it's completely different, and a year later it's completely different. And then after 4 or 5 years, everyone has forgotten what it was, then it becomes a golden oldie, and then maybe somebody's playing it on the radio. But it becomes old. It's not satisfying. Everything becomes old. Everything in this world comes into being and then it deteriorates and then it ceases to exist. But this sound vibration is different. It's a mantra. Mantra means that which delivers the mind. Maha mantra means the great thing which delivers the mind. So this sound vibration is something that we're all very hungry for, but we don't know. Sometimes when we eat something very tasty for the first time, we think it's strange. It's very strange. Like the first time, maybe somebody eats something that's different. You know, like Carolla. I don't know if you've had Carolla, but sometimes people, they call it an acquired taste because it's bitter. And then they have to learn how to like it. You know, they take the different spices, a little ghee, a little bit, and then it tastes good. So the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is kind of like that. It's like a different sound that we're not used to hearing. It's kind of nice, but it's just another sound. And after a while, we think we'll get tired of it. Because same thing over and over again. Sometimes people that see us on the streets, don't you know any other songs? So they hear us singing with them, don't you know something else, another mantra? But just like Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, or the words of the great saints and sages, we can hear them over and over again, and we don't get tired of them. We just know that there's a renewing thing about something that's transcendental, that's always replenishing itself. That even though it's the same thing, it's newer and newer and newer. It's like they call these trees out here, the fir trees, the pine trees, the evergreen trees. They don't lose their leaves like the other trees, the deciduous trees. They lose them in the fall and they grow them back in the winter. But this other kind of tree, is called evergreen. Now Krishna is also known as Navayovana. He's always new. He's always youthful. It's a very wonderful thing. We admire our youth, especially as we get up into our 40s, 50s, 60s. We think this is very wonderful. These are very happy, youthful people. But Krishna is always fresh, Navayovana. He's always new, he's always full of energy, he always looks young. And so this sound vibration, and it's always ever fresh. We never get tired of hearing it. It always, even though it's the same words, those words always take on new and fresh meaning. So that is the difference between Maha Mantra and ordinary sound vibration. Ordinary sound vibration, whatever we say, whatever word we say, it will get tiresome over and over again. You say the name of the President of the United States. Sounds kind of nice, but after four or five times, six, seven, eight, 10, 12 times, you don't hear it anymore. It just becomes monotonous. But the Hare Krishna mantra is a different kind of sound vibration. So Prabhupada makes this amazing statement. He says, transcendental inspiration is called Brahma Maya because when one is thus inspired, the sound he produces exactly corresponds to the sound vibration of the Vedas. This means that anyone who transmits this sound without an ulterior motive, with just the idea of passing along, that person is vibrating the original sound vibration, and it's as good as hearing Krishna, as good as hearing the Lord. So wherever we go, we can take this sound vibration with us, and it's equally powerful. You don't have to be a saint, a mahajan, a rishi, a muni, a great swami. You don't have to be to transmit transcendental teaching, transcendental knowledge. Prabhupada says, anyone, when one is thus inspired, it's a matter of inspiration. If I feel inspired, utsaham, it's in Sanskrit, very enthusiastic to do something, then that enthusiasm, that will become contagious. Isn't there a saying in English that enthusiasm is contagious? It is. So if you're enthusiastic about something, it will be contagious. If you're enthusiastic about something spiritual, then it will be contagious. Even though it may be very unconventional, it may be. I had an experience a group of us, we were about 24 years old, we were going from this country to England to start chanting and start a movement, start a mission. We were missionaries. So we asked Srila Prabhupada, who was there, what we should do when we went. We were going to leave from Montreal, Canada, to go to England the first time. So we wanted to know what secret is there. What secret? What advice do you give us that we can go to a foreign country and chant and people will like it? So Prabhupada told us a story about a French comedian named Max Linder. And this story he told us was something that took place in a silent movie. This Max Linder was kind of the guru of Charlie Chaplin. Acting and comedian guru, very famous man back in the silent pictures days. So this Prabhupada told us that he saw this story on a silent film when he was in Calcutta. And Max Linder was the star of the program, and the scene was a group of people. They were in out of doors, and there was a ballroom setting that there was a band playing and people were dancing. And a group of naughty boys were putting glue on the seats, on the park benches. So the couples would go, they would stroll off into the lane, down into the lanes, after they were dancing, and they would sit on these chairs that the boys were putting glue on. So when Max Linder and his girl sat down, they sat on the bench, then he got up, it caused his pants to rip, and exposing the back part of his body. This was in the film. I mean, he had shorts on, I suppose. But anyway, this is the way the film was. So Prabhupada told us this story, that he got back onto the central part of the patio and began to dance. And all of a sudden he noticed people were looking at him very strangely, and they were kind of laughing at him. So he thought that he must be a very good dancer. So he began to dance more enthusiastically and faster, and twirling around, and people began to smile even more, and some began to laugh. So it became contagious. And so another man went into the men's room And he exactly tore the seat of his trousers just like Mike Flinders did. He looked in the mirror to be sure it was the same. Went back out of the dance floor and he started dancing like it. And everybody was very amused. So one by one, every man in the place did this. And this film was a very short film. It was called Max Creates a Fashion. We didn't know about this film. It was the first time Prabhupada told us about it. And we had forgotten what we had asked him about originally, that we wanted to know what his advice was to go to England and speak about Krishna. So on the way home, to where we were staying, the temple, we started discussing, why did Prabhupada tell us that story anyway? What would that have to do with going to England? And then we gradually figured it out, we deduced, that he was saying, indirectly, that whatever you do, no matter how strange or unconventional it may be, if you do it with great enthusiasm, people will follow you. They'll like you. They want to do it themselves because they'll see how enthusiastic you are. So that was the message of this film, that this fellow just did what he was, very strange thing, doing it very conventionally, unconventionally, but with great enthusiasm, and everybody decided they wanted to do it, just like him. And this was our experience. We went to England, and we hadn't been there really before, most of us. And we had to chant in public. We had to go out in public. And because of our enthusiasm, people were very inclined to do it. They were struck with the enthusiasm, the contagiousness of it. So even though it was sometimes raining and very cold, and very few people came, but gradually there was a great enthusiasm, and big crowds started to come. And now, if you see the devotees, they go to Leicester Square, is that where they go? Or Piccadilly Circus, someplace like that? And thousands of people here, and hundreds are you know, surrounding and joining and dancing and chanting. So that's enthusiasm, spiritual enthusiasm. But this doesn't happen just because of enthusiasm. It also happens because there's a spiritual message. The spiritual message is the sound vibration. And everybody likes it. Everybody who hears it likes it. Actually, another little story I'll tell is that when I was in England, we made a recording of this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and it used to play on the radio. It became very popular. And we used to hear it in cars. People would drive by and we'd hear Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then even in Woolworth's department store, I remember going in there once, and it was being played. People were saying they liked it. And then there was a football game. They call it football. We call it soccer. In Manchester. Manchester had a very rough team. And the fans also were very rough. They would fill the stadium sometimes 5,000 people, 10,000 people. They played football. So when this record was popular, the Hare Krishna Mantra, at the midpoint of the game, the loudspeaker played all the latest songs that were the top 10 hits. So one of the songs was the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It was the only Sanskrit song that ever made it into the top 10 that I know of. I mean, maybe there's been some since then. But it was Hare Krishna, like that. So of course, Manchester United football fans tend on the Friday and Saturday nights to have a few drinks. They weren't in the exactly ordinary daily state of mind. But they were enthusiastic for their team. So they, as the songs played, they would sing along with them. So about the third song in this halftime was Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So they started singing with it, because it's a very easy song to sing. It's only 16 words, everybody could follow it. So they all started to sing. And more than any other song. So because this song is just so simple and so few words, and because it starts out with a singer, Jamuna Shiva leading the song, and then we would chant together, they all chanted, every single person. Over 5,000 people, all the Manchester United fans, the football fans, they sang the Hare Krishna Mantra. So that was a very, very nice experience. enlightening experience, something he probably didn't forget. Wherever these sounds are vibrated, people remember them. And they come from knowledge. They're not sentimental. They're not sounds that somebody just happened to like, or they played in a nice musical tune, and therefore they became popular. But very, very old, the sound vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra is a cry for the conditioned soul to our original father, Krishna. Ham Bijakar Hapita, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I'm the original father. So this mantra, unlike meditation in Satya Yuga, unlike temple worship and great sacrifice, which were practiced in Ankrita and Bhagavad Gita, is recommended in all the shastras, in all the mantras, in all the Upanishads, and all the Vedas. We'll find the Maha Mantra is the recommended way. You can get the same benefit that you get from meditating for 70,000 years in the Satya Yuga, for doing great sacrifice in temple worship and the other yugas. In this Kali age, you can get the great benefit. So this is not something that's new or invented. It's recommended, it's guaranteed by all the great Mahajans, by the Shastras. And whatever we have learned from the Vedas, we accept as what people call gospel truth. That is, there is some truth that is absolute. We live in a world of great relativity. Everything is relative. Even in science, that's not only even in science, but ever since people became enthralled with like Newtonian physics and the Age of Enlightenment and so many people all over the world, in every part of the world, began to think that in terms of what we call reductionism, a reductionist, everything can be reduced to atoms and molecules, even great symphonies and beautiful scenery, it all gets down to first atoms and molecules. So as transcendentalists, we have an understanding that not everything is like that, because that's not real. You can't explain how you feel about a beautiful symphony in terms of molecular and electromagnetic forces. There's some things that are absolute and eternal. And one of the things is the conviction we have that there is a God who can hear us, who can intervene in human affairs, who is very beautiful and who we can serve, and whose devotees we can serve. These are convictions which you can't break down into molecular pushes and pulls, or can perceive by empirical, objective, scientific, microscopic observation. But they're very real to us. They're as real to us as looking through a microscope and seeing a very tiny particle. They're just as real, and every bit is real. So it is upon this eternal knowledge, when we say Vedas, that we have absolutely, we think that there are such things as absolutes, that God is absolute, and the knowledge that comes from God, that is also absolute. And the world is crying out today for absolutes. People are disgusted that their children are watching such horrible things on television. People are disgusted because there's nothing they can go to their family to take their family to. It's family entertainment. People are disgusted at the level of intoxication. People are disgusted at what's going on in schools, that kids have to go through metal detectors to see if they have guns and knives in their schools. People are disgusted at the level of intoxication that's going on. The government had to spend $6 billion, with a B, dollars, to try to stop drug addiction among children aged from eight on up. So this is because there is no absolute morality. Everything is relative. What is my morality is your vice. And what is your vice is my morality. This is because people are pushing aside everything that's connected with God. If you make a value judgment, if you want to talk about God, you're some sort of a fanatic. You don't fit in. You're minimized. You're made very trivial. So the purpose of Krishna consciousness, among other things, is to establish that there is absolute knowledge, there's absolute morality, and there's something that is sustainable, something real, something genuine, that not everything is relative in this world. This is the teaching that comes from the Vedas. So therefore we say the Vedas, they're giving us absolute knowledge. Of course, we ask questions and we challenge. We're intelligent, rational human beings. But at the same time, we are convinced there is God. We're convinced that there are Vedas. We're convinced that there's a mantra that we can chant. We're convinced that we can become peaceful and happy. So it is this knowledge which everyone is actually knowingly or unknowingly crying out for. People want this knowledge. They want it, but they don't know they want it. So this is a very strange dilemma that people in the West find themselves in. They've had freedom. This is the land of the free, the home of the brave, to do everything, anything they want to do, anything under the sun. But at the same time, there's a great moral vacuum. You can't turn on the television without now wondering, oh, what's going to happen? My kids are going to watch it. And now they're coding all the TV shows. You know, that there's PG and AZ and VA, I don't know what they all are. But it's so, just the very thing that in every living room, the very thing that people look at the most, it's very suspicious. That little tool, it's going to destroy the consciousness of my child if I let him over just watch anything and everything that comes on. So we're very, very bewildered about what to do. And this is what happens when people lose their sense of the center holding, the center of gravity, that there is God. So Krishna consciousness through the Hare Krishna mantra. The point is to reestablish there is God. Now as Yuga Maharaj is learning here, that just by getting the mercy of the Supreme Lord, by being favored, even one may be very young and inexperienced as he was when he was giving his prayers, still such a person can get the Lord's mercy. You don't have to be a great Vedic scholar to get the Lord's appreciation and mercy. One doesn't have to be living in the renounced order of life in the Himalayas or something like that, or wearing saffron, or living in a Hare Krishna temple, or any other temple or place, to get the mercy of the Supreme Lord. That, just as he touched the head of Rupa Maharaj's concha, so he can touch the head of anyone. And as it is said, that anyone who, without ulterior motive, repeats the words of the Vedas, makes a sound that corresponds exactly to the sound vibration of the Vedas. It's a very popular thing today to talk about empowerment. We always hear about empowering this one, empowering that one. The corporate world likes to use this term. The boss is going to empower the employees. But real empowerment is actually spiritual. It's actually spiritual, that one can become a conduit for the transcendental vibration. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. That's real empowerment. You can take this mantra anywhere and speak about it to anyone. And anyone gets the complete benefit. That's real empowerment. And Prabhupada had an agenda for social change. And that's very far off for most of us to imagine that a holy man who came all the way from originally Calcutta, spent 5 years in Vrindavan, and came to America with an agenda for social change. Everyone's trying to make social change. Every religion, every interest group, everyone who's interested in the goodwill, the well-being of society. But with a body of knowledge that is timeless and with a sincere and enthusiastic mind, one can make progress towards social change. I mean, ultimately, Varnashram Dharma or Daivi Varnashram Dharma, Dharma is the way society needs to be ordered. And until such order of society is actually present, things will not be complete. But in order to begin, one starts chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. And then there's a sense of gradually how everything can be ordered in society. And the agenda, the radical agenda for social change, which may take hundreds and hundreds of years, is set into motion. So if you compare any other agenda for social change that exists on this planet, you'll find that it's not really doing the job. We're not making any social changes. Rather, we might see some negative changes going on. So we have a few minutes, and I would like to request everyone to chant the mantra as we're going to pass out beads and have our group meditation. But maybe have some questions or comments you'd like to make before we have a little time.
Yeah.
How long does it take for to be a bhakta? One can become a bhakta instantaneously, depending on our level of enthusiasm. It can also take a long time. It can take many years or many lifetimes. The price that we pay for attaining bhakti is our sincerity, our degree of surrender. The Bhagavad Gita asks us, Krishna asks Arjuna, that seek out people that you look up to, that are more advanced than you, and ask them questions, how you can serve them, what service you can render, and what you can do, or what questions you may have. Ask them. And by that question and answer process of spiritually advanced persons, we become advanced. And even though we may be very inexperienced in the beginning, we can get transcendental knowledge. And if we're enthusiastic to get that knowledge, the speaker will be very interested to transmit that knowledge to us, the person that we're looking at. So bhakti doesn't have to take a long time. Of course, generally we advise people to study books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So to come to the point of being very surrendered, it generally takes a few years. It's not something magic. You have to understand it with your complete mind and by asking lots of questions. The question is, can someone become a bhakta without approaching a spiritual master? Actually, everyone is, in one sense, a spiritual master. And everyone is also a bhakta. A spiritual master is a bhakta, and a bhakta is a spiritual master. Why? Because as a spiritual master, quote-unquote, is someone who is always learning. And a learner is always teaching others what he or she knows. It may not be so much, but whatever it is, jāvedāti, pārekā, Krishna upadesha. Krishna is advising us in the form of the personal Lord Chaitanya that we should teach, we should preach. So he says that everyone can become guru. And just by repeating what we've heard Srimad Bhagavatam, as we've read here, just by repeating, we become empowered, we become equal to the Vedas. So one is advised, to approach someone who can give diksha, or someone who can give tiksha. And this is our formal initiation on the path to Krishna consciousness. But Bhagavad Gita also says, according to what we are thinking at the time of death, that state we attain without failure. So even we may not have that, we're inviting everyone to do that, to take shiksha, take diksha. But somehow, even if we don't, we're confident that if our consciousness, at least at that time, at critical moment, is fixed on Krishna, that we will go back to the spiritual world. So gradually, it's a gradual process. We learn to chant, we learn to take association with advanced devotees, we learn to take association, we learn to transmit Krishna consciousness to others, and then we develop on a path of bhakti. So, yes, Mari?
Thank you.
So I think what you're asking is that there are two types of religions categorized very often. One is standard of traditional religions, like forms of Christianity, and the other are the kind of New Age variety of religion and meditation. And people see us in the second category, more or less, tend to. Well, first of all, because of the information flood, or glut of information, there are a lot of misnomers or terms that aren't really accurately labeled. It's a question of academics will call it labeling, mislabeling and labeling. This is a traditional religion, this is a new religion, this is an ethnic religion, so on and so forth. So it's really a question of it's a propaganda war, we might say, of getting people to understand. Probably the best thing for people to understand about Krishna consciousness is that it's older than Christianity. It's a traditional religion. At the same time, it's feel good in the sense that when you chant, there's an immediate form of yoga and meditation that you can practice. Therefore, you can feel good. And you can also feel good in a traditional religion. But to say Krishna consciousness is new, that is inaccurate, because it is not new. To say that it's a New Age religion or a feel-good religion, that's not the whole picture. So, as transcendentalists and aspiring transcendentalists, it's our duty of everyone to give the whole picture, to explain what Krishna consciousness is, to give the history. There's history. Bhagavad Gita is 5,000 years old. Great saints like Rupa Goswami, Adivendra Puri, Madhvacharya, Yamunacharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're all part of this tradition. So it's our duty also to individually to Jare Dake Tare Kahi Krishna Ubadesh, Amara Guruga, Ubadesh. We have to speak very well about Krishna consciousness and get the right picture. And on the macro level, we try also to do the same thing through books, massive book distribution, through radio, through TV, and so on. So I think we're getting past our japa time. It was a very good question. I'm sorry we didn't have proper time to get the complete answer. We'd like everyone to take your beads. And before we have arti, we'll chant together one round on the beads. And if you'll see you don't have a set of beads?
No, I have a question.
Okay, well, you can ask me afterwards, but right now we're going to take a few minutes to chant together. And then after 6:30 you can ask me. You can see the beads have one bead that has a thread on it. That's the summit bead, that's the main bead. We call it the Krishna bead sometimes. And with these two fingers, thumb, and third finger, which chant the Maha Mantra Jiz. It's up above the alcove on the way to the shop there. By the way, don't forget to visit that shop because there are many wonderful things you can take home with you. It's still the holiday season, so I'm sure you want to get something to your friends. We chant one beat of Maha Mantra, which is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we'll go around the whole set of beads until we come back. The sum of beads, that makes a total of 108 mantras. That's what we do. So we'll start. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.